Welcome, everyone. Please continue to come in and take a seat. We're going to get started. First of all, I want to thank our sponsor for today's session, Cisco. Thank you very much. My name is Jen Ostrich, and I am a leadership and transition coach and the founder and president of Ostrich Coaching and Consulting. I spent about 15 years working in the advertising and branding industry, and for about 13 of those 15 years, I absolutely loved it. And one day I woke up and realized I didn't. And that led me to thinking about how I needed to revive my career. So this session to me resonates a lot personally, and also something that, from what I see in a lot of my clients that I work with, I know will likely resonate with you as well. So we're glad you're here. For me, I realized that ultimately something had changed, and what I realized that was that I had changed, and I was really seeking a greater purpose in my career at that point in my life. And so I decided to make a switch, moving away from the focus of consumer brands and more toward a focus of people and their own brand, both as individuals and as leaders in organizations. So today, I get to work with people, and many of those people being women specifically, to help them identify who they are really at their most authentic. Because like any good brand, it needs to know who it is and what it stands for, and so do we as people. So that's what I get to do today in the spirit and hope that I get to help people live out their vision and make that become their reality. For that and many other reasons, I'm very proud and excited to be a partner with this conference for the same purpose that it's all about empowering women. And so very happy to be here, and I'm very thrilled to be introducing this panel that you're going to be hearing from this morning. This session, Reviving Your Career, you are promised to leave here with actionable steps for how you can achieve a professional renaissance. We have a stellar panel put together of leaders and pioneers in the space of creating change and reviving careers. So I'd like to first and foremost introduce our thought leader who's with us today, Carrie Hannon. And I had a few minutes to speak with Carrie, and she let me know that among the many award-winning and best-selling books that she wrote, her latest book, which is about loving your job, she actually really learned everything about that book from her dog, whose name is Zena, and she is a gorgeous yellow lab. So please join me and put our hands together in welcoming Carrie Hannon. Thank you.
Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. I appreciate it. And yeah, Zena is the introduction to my book, and it's absolutely true. She attacks each day with gusto, and she's always willing to network and with the other dogs in the dog park, and she loves learning new things. She likes to travel. She really's got a good deal, and it's a barter system, so she never complains about pay, to tell you the truth. But you know, just quickly in looking at this topic about revitalizing your career, there's a couple of quick tips I give. You know, I travel around the country and I talk to audiences, mostly over 50, people looking for work. And, you know, you see this palpable fear that they just want a job, you know. And it's hard to get traction in the workplace. And I would go home and I'd see my friends who were complaining about, whining about their jobs. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, get over it. You know, you can't just have this, take this job and shove it. It's got to be take this job and love it or go do something else. And so, there's a couple of ways you can look at, and so in sort of a broad picture, and I think this panel is amazing and you'll get really specific ideas from a corporate and from a coaching standpoint. But for me, I have a couple of quick tips. I always encourage people to help you fall back in love with your current job, because finding a new job is difficult out there, no matter what the jobs numbers tell you. If you're at a certain age, it's really a slippery slope. So if you can find ways to revitalize where you are right now, I think it's terrific. And there are good ways to do that. You can, you know, one great way is to kind of to learn something new. If there's a way that you can, you know, just get some employee, you know, through your employer, have some education. If you can't get through your employer workplace, learn something new, go to a community college and take a speaking course, a public speaking course, or an improv class. Once you start to learn something, your brain kind of fires up and you get energized again. It shifts things for you. Another simple thing, it sounds crazy, it might be something that Zena would put in her category, declutter your office. I often tell people, look around you, it's sapping your energy. If you start, it's a real basic exercise. If you start pulling things out of your office, You're making decisions. I value this, I don't value this. It comes down to how you value your own work and what you care about. And that's a really important thing to do. There's ways to find joy around the edges of your job by volunteering with coworkers, by doing things, you know, mentoring projects, all kinds of things that might not be, most people when I ask them, why do you love your job? It's not the job per se. It's that they love the people they work with. They love the things that they're learning, the opportunity to travel. Maybe it's the opportunity to work from home, to be have some autonomy, to kind of feel in control of their destiny. It's, they often believe in the mission of their business, of the company, whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit company. If it's something that's making a difference in other people's lives, they feel really good about what they're doing. So look around you and find ways that you might find that sort of energy again in your workplace. And often it's just raising your hand and saying, I'll try that. Ask for new duties. We're often really frightened to do that because no one likes to fail. But there's this certain energy that comes from the adrenaline rush of being a little scared that gets us excited about going to work again. So, you know, those, I'm going to keep that kind of quick. There's lots of other tips that I think about along the way, but it's often just about taking a look and dissecting your current job. And what is it that I do well? What can I reach out to do more? Maybe it's even just volunteering to work in a different department for a while. Anything that kind of gets those juices going. And realize often people say, well, I hate my job because I don't like my boss. Well, think about shift it. Try to see it from your boss's perspective. You know, it's really, they want to do well. They want you to do well, and that reflects on them. So there's ways to kind of shift your thinking and stop that negative tape. So I think learning to love your job again is a lot of, and to revitalize it is a lot of soul searching, and we all can do that. And it's all within our power, because whether you love what you're doing or you don't love it, it's up to you to make those changes to make it happen. So I have this amazing panel here with me that are real pros, and we're going to just kind of go down the line, and everyone's going to introduce themselves to you, and then I have a quick question I'm going to ask everyone, and then we're going to launch into some individual expertise areas. So if you would kick us off here.
Sure. Cheryl Atkins, Chief Marketing Officer of Mary Kay. I truly love what I do. I've actually told my CEO that if I hit the lottery, I'd go celebrate, and then I'd bounce right back. He was happy about that. In a nutshell, I support the success of 3.5 million women around the world, so I have a why. I have a purpose. My career has run the gamut from retailing, marketing, sales, IT operations, financial services. So I've always known that I wanted to be in a position to lead a global business. So I've had the benefit of working with a wide cross-section of women across my career.
Hi, I'm Wendy Walbridge, and I'm so happy to be here and see all of you wonderful women reinventing yourselves. I'm an executive coach. I'm an author of a Spiraling Upward that just came out. This is a book that sort of embodies the work that I've done over the last 20 years that helps women to integrate the feminine and masculine energies inside of themselves in order to take their work and life to a more authentic expression in the world. And I work primarily in Silicon Valley, but virtually with some around the world, and I do executive coaching, and I lead programs for women inside corporations, both team programs and also women's leadership programs.
Good morning. I'm Gail Morris, and I'm with Cisco, and equally amazed and excited to see all the great women and men here in our audience today. We have great gender representation here. I run the America's Global Customer Success team at Cisco, which is just that, a team of folks focused on ensuring our customers get value out of the amazing solutions we sell and in turn retain those solutions for a long period of time. I've been in the technology industry for a long time. I'm not going to say because then you'll think I'm really old. But I've been doing this a while, and I wake up every day at Cisco with a passion for what I do because of the team I work with. Every day is a new opportunity. Every day is a new challenge. I've run businesses inside the U.S. and globally in Europe and Asia. And no matter where you are in the world, and the diversity you see from culture in the world, there is opportunity for unleashing the power and the passion of women to actually make a difference individually, collectively, for our company, for our customers, and for our families.
Hi, I'm Laura Sims. I've got a story a little bit like Jen's. I started out as an actor, and I was a working actor for about 10 years, and that was my passion. And I loved it, and I did a lot of horrible plays in like cafeterias and basements that you're so glad you didn't see. And then I got to do some more exciting work in Los Angeles, and I loved that until I didn't. And I just started to question, is my life really better because of how I'm spending my days? Is anyone else's life really better because of how I'm spending my days? And I wanted to do something that was much more service-oriented. I wanted to wake up and feel like my work does matter and something good is going to happen because of how I'm spending my time today. So I had a real big career crisis, a real big identity crisis, because my work was so much a part of who I was. And after several false starts, I decided to become a career coach, and I wanted to help shepherd other people through this transition period of helping them find some kind of work that was going to be meaningful, personal to them, and still make a difference to other people. So I do that now through a career change program called Your Career Homecoming. There's a free training starting on the website on Tuesday if you want to check that out. I'm based in a tiny town, Nacogdoches. Anyone? Yeah! Where? Good question. Near Louisiana, sort of. Awesome. Near nothing big. But thanks to the internet, I get to work with people all over, and glad to be here today.
Terrific. Well, thanks for all those wonderful bios. We're all like, ah. So I'm just going to start with one question. Each of the panelists is going to say yes, no, and if they, why their answer was that. So we'll start with you. What do you think about this question, Cheryl? To start, I want to think about this question. Should women manage their careers differently than men?
I will say that, yes, women have to manage their careers differently than men. I believe that men have the luxury of being able to manage their careers like checkers, and that women need to play like it's chess.
Mm-hmm. Good. And Wendy, what do you think? Well, you know, we got a lot of way to go today. So
I think absolutely we have to. First of all, our brains are different, our capabilities are different, the world is different, the opportunities are different for both men and women. And women really, we have this, we have a disadvantage in some ways in that we have a louder inner critic than most men do. I coach both men and women, and it seems like if you don't learn how to become very intimate with your own inner talk, it can...
Yeah, it may have come out.
Is it on now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, if we need to be...
I'll hold it.
On, right? Can you hear that?
Yeah,
I can hear that. Okay, so I'm going to hold this up here. Can you hear me now? Okay, thank you. So the masculine path to success, the linear path, is very horizontal. And if we were to follow that, it's all about achievements and getting all A's, accolades, achievements, acquisitions, approval. We can get sucked into that very horizontal path. It does not bring us to fulfillment. Women, the missing ingredient for women is we want meaning and fulfillment. It's really important. Not that guys don't, but that's really important to us. So we have to become acquainted both with the horizontal path where we learn competencies and the vertical path where we learn compassion, consciousness, self-awareness, getting to know who we really are, and then integrate that we learn about ourselves into the direction of our careers, which is the spiral path.
Gail?
I agree with Cheryl and Wendy. I like your answer. And I think definitely yes, and kind of in the context of the topic of this session today, when you think about how to restart yourself or revitalize yourself in your particular career path and take on something new or different or exciting, it is somewhat nuanced and certainly different for women than it is with men. I, like Laura, have been through a few opportunities. I call them opportunities, learning opportunities in my career where I have either made a decision to make a drastic shift or somebody else made the decision for me. Right? And how you actually manage through that as a woman and how you approach it for a lot of the insights that the two previous panelists shared is different. So it is different. It's not bad. It's not good. It's just different.
Thanks.
Laura? I'm going to say yes, but I would just like to change the question entirely and say, should men manage their careers differently than women? Why is the male career the default? You know, so I think that's something that we should, you know, that we should talk about too, is it's assumed that the male way is the way and the female way is the deviant way, and let's flip it so it's more equal.
Okay. Well, we'll hop into good point, Laura. We'll hop into sort of the meat of our discussion here, and we're going to start with Cheryl. So when you coach or interview women who are looking to make a career transition or shift, what's the key advice that you give them?
I focus on three questions. The first one sounds very obvious, but it's what do you want to do? A lot of times what people talk about, it's not very specific or well-defined. So knowing the what, but even more importantly, understanding and being able to articulate the why. Mm. Many times what people say they want to do is not really well-aligned with their why. Coming back to your point about the meaning of it, I often find a lot of times the reason why people want to change has really nothing to do with their career or what they're doing right now. So the why provides clarity. The third thing that I talk to them about is, what is your wow? What is the thing that's going to make you successful in this new transition that you aspire to? Because until and unless you know your wow, what's going to make you successful? Two things. One, you're not going to be persuasive and compelling transitioning into a new role or a new company. And you're probably not going to go into that role with the confidence that you need. So again, knowing what you want to do, why you want to do it, and what is the wow, that towering strength that you will bring into this new responsibility? So
I love
that's
it.
That's my framework.
Now, Wendy, your book, which you have with you, proposes sort of this new roadmap for women. You know, what is it? How does it work?
Well, like I said, there's the horizontal path and the vertical path, and when you start to integrate in those moments when you have what you were talking about, where you have an unexpected break open in your life, like whether it's that you chose it and you have a new path suddenly or a new job, or if you're asking to be work at a higher level, things that also come to us are diagnosis, loss of a loved one, loss of something that we hold dear, a dream. And those things can open us up to actually to more of who we are. If we can realize they're not problems, they're actually invitations to embody more of who you are so that then you can decide which direction to go next. Because you're the only one who knows what success looks like for you, really. And we get mixed up that success is what we want when really what we want is to be of value. And when we can, you know, find those things that really matter to us, that's when we become of value. And what I talk about in my book are five co-creative powers. Everyone has them. Those are our energy, which you talked a lot about at the beginning, like how you raise your energy just to change the whole perspective of what you're doing. So raising your energy, asking yourself the question, keeping a little piece of paper at your desk with a plus and a minus, and things that fill you up in the plus side, things that take away your energy in the minus side, and then start to navigate towards more of the pluses. That's co-creative power of energy or presence. Then I won't go into the other ones, I'm just way too long, but co-creative power of mind, what thoughts you keep and you put on the altar of your life, and can you interrupt those, and are they really worth your time? The feelings, we often suppress our feelings in corporate life and in work life. We think we're not supposed to have them when they're actually incredibly, sometimes the doorway to the truth for us if we can investigate. And then the co-creative power of speech, being able to articulate your value, say no when you mean no, say yes when you mean yes, and actions, taking actions that are bold, not from fear, and becoming acquainted with fear so that it doesn't drive your decisions.
Oh, that's excellent, Wendy. I think the fear question is a big one for a lot of people. Yes. Now, Gail, when you are seeking input on career development, Often people say, you know, you're in the driver's seat, you know, of your growth, you know, it's up to you and so forth. You know, is this true? I mean, is it really up to us to do this?
Well, that's, I've heard that all throughout my career. Early in my career, I always got the advice, you're in the driver's seat, you're in control. And while I firmly believe, you know, you have to be in that driver's seat, you know, controlling your destiny, it can be somewhat elusive because in a lot of cases, there are things that are completely out of your control, corporate restructuring, downsizing, political landscape, relationships that you don't really know, you don't have a lens into. So I actually like to turn it around. It took me a little while to figure this out after getting frustrated on, I'm in the driver's seat, I'm ready to drive, I'm behind the wheel, the road's ahead of me, where is it? But, you know, focus on what you can control, right? Focus on what you can bring, because when you do that, career opportunity or new opportunities may, in fact, present themselves. And it starts with how you show up. It starts with your brand. It starts with, we talked a lot about branding at the conference today. It starts with how your value is perceived and the value you bring to your role, to your team, and more broadly, to your company. And I think it was about 10 years ago for me, I had an epiphany after I read Marcus Buckingham. I know we had a lot of great authors here, so I'll share another great one about now Discover Your Strengths. And, you know, for my whole professional life, I've gone through the proverbial once-a-year cycle where your manager sat with you and said, hey, you're doing really good on this. This is the long list of stuff you don't really do well. And we have, you know, women, we kind of have these gremlins, and we obsess about, oh, my gosh, and I'm a list taker and I'm a completer. So if someone gives me a list, I am on that list. And if the list of to get better is longer than this other, where are you going to spend your time? The clarity I got from actually reading and sharing stories with colleagues who had also followed a similar discipline is to enhance your brand, go focus on those things you do really, really well. Really well. Illuminate those. Raise your hand for the project where you can showcase those skills. And if you're not real clear about what you're really good at, right, because sometimes you don't realize it in the hustle and bustle, have some trusted advisors other than your immediate supervisor help you with that. And if you actually build your brand pivoted on your strengths and know your strengths and know where you have opportunities, so you get other people that are really good on that long list, that's how you build great, great teams, you'll get a lot more success. That's worked for me.
Love it. That's so true. To really do that sort of soul searching and combing through the MRI on what we do well. Laura, this is a question I get all the time, and I'm sure you are the pro here. And just in the last session I was in, you know, we know we want to do something different at this stage in our lives, perhaps, but how do they figure it out? How do you know if, you know, you want to do something, but you're not clear on what it is. What kind of advice, what starting points should people have?
Okay, here's my favorite starting point. You probably know what you don't want to do, right? So I would say write a hell no list. And this can be from the most trivial to the most profound. Hell no, I'm not going to work somewhere I have to wear heels. Hell no, I'm not going to work in an office with no windows. Hell no, I'm not going to work in an environment where my supervisor is breathing down my neck. Come up with a nice list of stuff that you are just ready to draw a line in the sand about. And you may start to see some patterns emerge, and you may start to see, okay, I know here's what I'm avoiding. Kind of like if you've dated bad boyfriends, like you're not dating that guy again. And then you get to flip it, and you get to find out, well, what's on your hell yes list? Well, hell yes, I want to work in an environment where I can dress casually and comfortably and express myself. Hell yes, I want to work in an office that's got a lot of bright light and an open floor plan. You know, hell yes, I want to work on a collaborative team where I'm trusted and given the autonomy to do the work that I enjoy. And that, while it's not going to be like a beeline to your most perfect career, it's going to start showing you what you're aiming for and what you're excited about, not just in terms of the subject matter of the field you want to work in, but the environment you want to be in, the kind of colleagues you want to have, what you want your day to look like. And that at least gives you a starting point. So if an opportunity does come, well, is this more towards my hell no list or is this more towards my hell yes list? You can kind of say, okay, I think I'm going to try this, but I know going in these are some places that I'm going to compromise, or no, no, like too many things on the no list and I'm not going to compromise. So that's where I'd say to start.
Love it. And so there's no perfect starting place.
Right.
Just get started. Cheryl, Mary Kay has been sort of an incredible place for women, and particularly to sort of launch entrepreneurial ventures. Millions of women, in fact, around the world, as you were telling me. I mean, it's incredible, Mary Kay. I had no idea the breadth of your reach. So tell us a little bit about the entrepreneurial path, because women in particular like this sort of approach to work. And what can you help us with here?
Well, I think an entrepreneurial opportunity, whether it might be direct selling, it could be consulting, certainly with the help of technology and social media, it really does facilitate having a business. It might even be consulting, et cetera. A couple of different things. It really does enable you to put forth your talents in a forum that is not constrained by someone else's expectations. So very few companies let you bring all of you to your work. So working for yourself, you hopefully have the best boss in the world. And that's very important because there's a freedom. There's a confidence that comes from being able to bring your talents full force to what you're doing and bringing it forward with a purpose that you care about. There are a lot of entrepreneurial opportunities and resources that provide an incredible amount of support. And I think many people, and particularly women, are hesitant and fearful to kind of go out there. And I think they hang on perhaps a little too tightly to a company and a corporation for affirmation, not realizing how much support there is for women on multiple levels. And I will also say, as you can tell from the support of this conference, there are so many companies extremely anxious to support women's entrepreneurial ventures. So I think women of all ages owe it to themselves to explore it. And I can say from my Mary Kay experience, they will be pleasantly surprised how successful they can be.
It's so empowering. I mean, when you're accountable to yourself, pretty amazing. I work for myself, so I highly recommend it. Wendy, what are the signs? Okay, one thing when I meet with people, a lot of it is that they say they want to change jobs or switch careers, but at the bottom line, or they hate their job, it's because they're bored. I mean, boredom is kind of what's the problem, but they don't identify it that. But also burnout. And so what should someone do about that situation? How does your advice on how to kind of dig yourself out of that?
Thank you. That's a really good question. I bet. How many of you would like to have more work-life integration here? Yeah. How many of you feel like you might be near burnout? It's hard to, wow. Yeah, oh my gosh. So for me, I'm a new mom, believe it or not. I took on my sister's son when she died. He's 14. So I've had him for 2 years. It's complete, I don't look that young, right? I'm a very different kind of mom. But what also it's done is it's stretched me to the next level of because I have my own business. My book just came out. Can you imagine? So, and I love him, and I want to do the very best by him. And I know you as mothers, the ones that are parents here, do too. So it's hard because you have to make that call all the time, like what's important, and be true to yourself, but also be true to the people that you care about. And it's really easy to get lost in the commitments. So for me, one big red flag is when I start to feel resentful. When I start to feel resentful of him, or I start to be crabby, that's a big flag that I need to pay attention to me. And when I pay attention to me, and he's all for it, like he goes, oh, go have fun, because he can see I'm being a little martyr, like my mother was, God help me. That when I take care of me, I become more full, and then I can contribute much more to him, even if it's a lesser time frame. So that's one thing. The other thing is you gotta say no. You gotta say no to some of the things. All of us up here get a lot of opportunities, and as you keep elevating in your career, you're gonna get more invitations, more shiny objects. And it just comes a time where you have to know what's a hell yeah and what's a hell no. I totally go with that. And also you have to create a clearing. a clearing in your life. Where do you give back to you? What, like for me, if I go swimming, if I can just go swimming, I'll just clear my head and I'll be able to see life differently. Or yoga or meditation, or if that's too woo-woo for you, maybe you go running, or I don't know, whatever it is, you have to commit to that as much as you would a doctor's appointment and get that into your schedule. And then you will be able to be in that place where you can decide, am I really doing something that's not in my best interest? Is this job really right for me? What do I need to change in my life? You'll be centered in the truth of who you are, the essence of who you are, which is where your driver's seat is for everything good. So that's what I would say.
Fantastic. I love that. Yeah. Take time out for you. That's so critical. That it's really hard.
Hard to do.
Yeah. Gail, we talked about you've had a really interesting career, and there's points that you come to, and it's like, how do I know whether to take this opportunity? You know, how do I know when to make the next move? What do you see there?
Yeah. And it's always, you start out intending to be very planful, and it never quite works out that way with life. I think what, has really helped me, and I coach a lot of my team and colleagues and individuals I mentor on this, it is about building your network, but building your network with purpose, okay? And that doesn't mean you're anything other than authentic or genuine in the relationships you build, but be a little bit more prescriptive in your network and kind of consider what's your core network or, a colleague of mine, she's here, she calls them her favorite five. I'm not in those favorite five, though. Or your personal board of directors, because I'm her boss. Personal board of directors. But consider the diversity of individuals in that group. So, you can have somebody in that group that's a mentor, many mentors that build you up, that give you self-esteem. You need to have a straight person in that group, the person who will tell you, hell no, don't take that, or hell yes, or somebody who's known you for a long period of time. It can be, somebody, your parents, right? Mm-hmm. And do consider the mix of folks you have in there. And the other thing that I think has really, really helped me in my career is to balance the mentor versus sponsor mix. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the context of mentor versus sponsor, mm-hmm. but consider this for a minute. When you're looking for a new opportunity, a new role, a new opportunity at a new company, give some thought to who's in there cheering for you. Who's, saying, hey, Gail would be great at this. Let me toss her name in the hat. And who's really backing you? And chances are that individual is probably not a mentor who's, helped you out a lot. It's probably a sponsor. And in most cases, the sponsor is a senior level executive inside your company or a senior level person you've worked with. It could be in a community event or some other outside your company that actually will back you, will support you when you're not there. And being prescriptive in how you build your network so you have a great balance of individuals that will be authentic, that will mentor, but also those sponsors, one inside your company and one outside your mm-hmm. company, that will advocate on your behalf. Mm-hmm. It makes a really big difference. Absolutely. Really big.
Great point.
Yeah, I think sponsorship is huge. I think a lot of people get caught up in the idea of mentoring, but the sponsor, because you reflect on them, it makes them look good too. So they have a vested interest in you.
Yeah.
It becomes a teamwork in a way. It's not a one-way street. So that's great. And the other thing, Gail, I think the idea too is you surround yourself with positive people. I mean, I think a lot of people get sucked into negative energy in the workplace if they're not with a team of people who believe in them, too. Laura, this is so buzzy now. Everyone's like, oh, I want to follow my passion. I'm guilty of putting that in the subtitle of a book. So how do I combine my passion with a career? Is this realistic? I mean, how do you go about that?
Yeah, well, thank you, because you give me something to push against. So I think it's absolutely possible to combine your passions. But it's tricky, and a lot of people try it, and it doesn't work out very well. So to me, this is kind of like saying, oh, if I could just gather up all my favorite food and put them in one recipe, it would be the best thing ever. Well, if I did that, we would have, like, nachos and maybe, like, some apple slices and some dinner rolls and, like, a caramel sauce on top. right? It's disgusting. I wouldn't want to eat that. I wouldn't be able to sell that. Because what those things have in common is that I love them. And that's what we try to do a lot of times when we try to combine our passions. It's about, what do I love? What do I enjoy? What am I going to get out of this? And how it's going to serve someone else or how it's going to make money is a total afterthought. And then we get really mad that this mountain of nachos and caramel sauce is not doing for us what we were told it would do. Follow your passion and the money will come. Follow your bliss. So as an alternative to that, and by the way, if the nacho mound works for you, I am all for it. Like, if follow your passion is working for you, keep following. But if you've come upon this abomination and it's not doing for you what you want it to do, it's really great to kind of look under the hood of those passions. What is it about those things that drives you? We're kind of wanting to look at almost the DNA of what you are really driven to do and what you care about. So when I was going through my own career crisis, I looked at some of the things that I was really excited about. I loved being an actor. I loved teaching acting. And I was really interested in web design. So what was it about those things? And what I found that those things had in common was that I got to be not just in collaboration, but almost in communion with other people, had a really strong relationship with other people. Doing those things meant I got to create something new. It meant that I got to do something that felt artistic, even if it wasn't art in terms of, you know, painting and writing and that kind of thing. So for me, that became kind of what I call my through line. That's the thing that those passions had in common. So I would say look for your through line. Go digging underneath the passions and see what it is about them that drives you. Then try to connect the dots between those different little pieces of DNA. Find what they have in common. And that's another thing. If you've got your hell no list and your hell yes list and you've got your through line, that's a really strong foundation to start looking at other opportunities and gives you a way to evaluate opportunities that you might have.
I love that. I mean, there's so many people that I've met have, you know, had this issue where they have this passion and they want to start what's next or start a new career. And one woman I know, she was a corporate lawyer, and she took an early retirement package, and she loved to garden. I mean, that's what she absolutely loved to do. And so she thought, well, what the heck, I'm going to start a landscaping business. And what she found out is that she was miserable because she was so lonely. So much of her gardening was a respite from the corporate world. That was her quiet time. That was her, and although she loved being in the garden, she was a people person. And so it just, you know, she had to go back and she needed her through line. She really needed to figure it out. But I mean, it was a real lesson learned about, you know, not trying to ruin your hobby. This is awesome, Cheryl. This next area I thought would be interesting with you is you do a lot of not-for-profit service, a lot of volunteer work. And with the Dallas Museum of Art, I guess, is one of your major ones. Can you volunteer work or your nonprofit work, service, board service, how can that kind of lead you to a career change? And because I often recommend it to people as a great way, and I know you have firsthand experience.
I think service, whether it's a not-for-profit or a board, is by far the best and one of the most overlooked career management tools, whether you're within a company now or looking to make a transition. When you join a company, it's one of the quickest ways to connect with some really good people in the company. Usually the people who are involved in these things are well-respected. They know the landscape and the culture. It's a great way to get visibility. It's also very gratifying. So when you're not feeling as appreciated and impactful, all you have to do is spend the day at a domestic violence shelter or help kids. And that is one way to recharge your confidence about the value you bring. So it's important. And then as you think about a transition, let's say you're in marketing and you want to go to finance. Well, in a not-for-profit situation, it's pretty much a clear slate. They're so happy you're volunteering. You can say, I'm going to be on finance committee. You'll say, okay, thank you.
You're hired.
Or by the same time, you can say, oh, I'm going to be in charge of marketing. They'll say, thank you. So it really is that opportunity to be who you want to be and for others to see you that way. Now, you have to come into those roles, you have to look ready. It's
So you can't kind of come in your yoga pants. You can't come late. You know, you have to come into these roles so that people can see you the way you want to be seen professionally. So I think it's win-win. It's helping the causes. It's good visibility for your company and the community, and it's a great developmental and networking opportunity for you.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome if you're going to, if you start job seeking at another point, you have that finance experience there that you can spin it on your LinkedIn. You know, LinkedIn profiles, we can put our volunteer work up there, we can do all that, but there's a way to spin that in business lingo that it absolutely gives you that, and you even have people that can vouch for you. So, yeah, I love that.
If you think about what we were chatting about a moment ago on sponsorship, and I totally agree with everything you shared then, a lot of those interactions are great opportunities to build relationships that can help sponsor you. Mm-hmm. And it's such the right thing to do, mm-hmm. but it can be so rewarding personally, but also professionally too.
So if you're volunteering within your organization in something, then you get a sponsor inside you might meet.
Exactly.
And if it's an outside thing, you might meet somebody. So that's really wonderful. Wendy, you talk a little bit about this area of inner authority. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on that?
Sure. One of the things that I notice with, by the way, how many of you are interested in knowing how to get ahead in your own career, in your own job that you're currently in and not change jobs? Okay. Oh, good. Okay. I just wanted
to Bruce.
See, yeah.
I'm in.
Almost everybody.
I'm liking it.
So I, you know, I'm going to use an example of somebody. I've coached all range of people, but one of the most successful people I ever coached reported to Steve Jobs. And she, one of the things I think she was not immune to the things that we're all at fault doing, which is to kind of audition for the job you already have. And part of what we also do is we tend to be putting our attention on waiting for people to acknowledge us. Women in particular do that more than men. Men are really good at acknowledging themselves. Women are not so good at that. Mm-hmm. So what we don't do well is internalize the success we already have. So for her, she was waiting for him to praise her, and he was never going to do that. He doesn't do that very well, didn't do that very well. And so she gained inner authority by really taking stock of what she had done in her life and who she was and what she stood for. You have to do that inner work. That's when you become self-possessed and in your inner authority, and then you get, you're in your own inner GPS. So you're not auditioning for jobs you already have. You're not trying to get people to like you that you don't really care about. You're getting invited to a party that you don't want to go to. All those things that happened to me, you know, I really am very well aware of these. So inner authority is in my book, you know, I'm not trying to really pitch it so much as say there's five ways that we become much more self-possessed and be able to be intentional and deliberate about how we show up in a meeting, what we say, how our feelings are. We can have much more influence over our feelings and thoughts than we thought we could. And those are the starting place for confidence and for being able to go for what you want in life. Everything you really, really want, you have to have inner authority to be able to go after.
We're working on that.
All right.
Back to this buzzy word again, passion. I'm not trying to find my passion for my dream job, but how do I kind of re-energize where I am right now? How do I use passion to do that, Gail?
Well, first of all, at the risk of sounding like a presidential primary, passion is huge. We are in Texas.
That's right.
But you know what? I think we probably underestimate. We've all talked about passion here. You talked about wow. You talked about your hell yes, hell no. Passion is huge. And really getting dialed into what gets you excited. And as a leader, what actually gets your team members excited and giving them the opportunity to leverage that passion to help fulfill their current role or really understand what that passion is to coach and guide a valuable team member in a direction where they can unlock and unleash their full potential. If you don't have that passion about what you're doing, and sometimes you can have too much passion, it can make people crazy, you can come on too strong. I've been
accused of that.
I'm a card-carrying passionate leader. And it can be a little bit too aggressive, but I would take that all day long in a team member and mm-hmm. for myself as a leader. But having a passion comes out when you're looking for that next opportunity. And being dialed into what you want, aligned with what you're passionate about, taking your plus list and your minus list and really being prescriptive on it. It's mm-hmm. huge. It's great. Mm-hmm. It really is huge.
Totally.
So this whole area of starting over in a new career, and it's something I write and talk about a lot myself. And, you know, I have this sort of fitness program I tell everyone. If you want to, you know, if you're thinking about making a big career transition, you need to be financially fit, you need to be physically fit, and you need to be spiritually fit. But a big piece of that is the financial fitness piece because, you know, money is the biggest stumbling block to really making a career transition. And I could go on with that, but I know, Laura, this is an area you deal with your clients a lot talking about. How do you end up, you know, how do I really get started in a new career when I'm probably going to have to start with less money than I made before? Or if I'm starting my own business, maybe can't even pay myself for a year or so.
Yeah, okay, this is an answer nobody likes. I'm ready to be unpopular. But you take your time when you need to. You know, we love hearing overnight success stories. We want that to be us. A thoughtful, planned out career transition might take you 2 years, might take you 3 years, might take you 5 years. But what you want to do instead of like go to bed on Sunday night in one job and wake up Monday morning in another job, it doesn't work like that. You want to plan for a crossfade. So you want to imagine fading out the job you have while you're simultaneously fading into the job you want. So this is kind of I think of it as like the awkward teenage stage of a career, right? It's like elbows are sticking out and you got knobby knees and things are just awkward. You might feel like you have two identities at once and you're having to like sneak around a little bit, but that's also kind of fun. So like let's say your dream is to be like a photographer for National Geographic. But currently you are an administrative assistant like at a university. So how do we get there? Start taking whatever steps you can. Maybe you can ditch the administrative assistant job and become a photographer's assistant. So you're still doing administrative work, but at least you're in an environment where you're going to be learning from them, where you can be making connections with people in that field. Take a photography class while you hold down the old job. Start seeing if you can get a hold of people on Twitter who work for National Geographic. You know, just start wherever you can. Plan that crossfade. Know that it can take some time, but don't get discouraged if you're not an overnight success story. I'd much rather you be a 5-year, very unexciting success story than to just stay in a flatlined career and become one of those stories, because this is not, you can't stay there, you know, mm-hmm. if it's not, if it doesn't light you up, if you don't feel like you're getting to contribute anything. If it takes a long time, let it take a long time, but just keep going.
Yeah, I think baby steps. I mean, so because we talked about earlier, it's hard to find the ideal place to start, but a career change does typically take 3 to 5 years. The successful ones I've met, the people who have been able to do that. And I think it's critical that you do that slowly, you know, fade into it. I think it's great advice in order to do that, because it does take a bit of time to add all those little pieces together and try to make it work for you. So I think we might have some time for some questions right now. Do we have a microphone over here? And
you can just step right up to the mic behind you.
It should be on. They should.
And you could just, yeah. If you have questions, just get in line behind the mics.
Good afternoon, ladies. My name is Maria Carmen, and I'm 61 years old,
yes.
A baby boomer. And presently, I'm a student also. I have a degree in business. I got it when I was 57. And after I was taking care of my parents, and they passed, and I said I maybe want to go back to school to further whatever career I wanted. I was in nursing school, but I ended up getting a business degree. I was working, or still working, with the largest grocery store here in Texas as a supervisor, but I stepped down because of school. And I was trying to also, I'm a licensed real estate agent as an apartment locator, and I was just doing that for 4 months. My question is, like, I'm 61 years old. I tried to apply, you know, like imaging or healthcare companies. And, of course, within filling up an application, and there's this option questions, your date, your background, things like that. And, of course, you just have to put your Social Security and age. And as executives in the largest company here in America, if you have an applicant at, say, 61 years old, would you still hire her or him versus a 21-year-old?
Good question. Ageism is alive and well in the workplace. So, Gail, I'm going to give you a shot at that one.
I'm not sure where you are applying, where you actually have to put your age, but here's what I would say to you. Uh-huh. Absolutely, yes, I would hire the best qualified person for the role.
Regardless. I believe I have a great experience. Yeah. I'm a professional student.
Yeah.
I've been in school.
But I think, as leaders, and, Cheryl may have some great perspectives on this as well, we try to focus on casting a wide net, getting a diverse set of candidates, which include not only ethnicity and gender, but also generational. And I have a multi-generational team. I have folks just out of college, and I have individuals who I'm thrilled they're still on my team and they're not retiring yet. And they all bring so much to Cisco every single day.
And I echo that.
Yeah. Well, I have a great customer service experience, and I love people. That's why I am the diagnostics medical sonography.
We have to go to our next question.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And just for those of you who are thinking about leaving, stay till the end because there's some free giveaways that we have for you.
Really? Wow.
There are?
Yeah. I have one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of listening to a lot of podcasts and watching webinars, and then also jumping on Periscopes with people that I think are really successful entrepreneurs. A lot of them have talked about the power of coaching and masterminds, and that their business didn't really take off until they started, business coaching. So my question would be, for us that might consider doing either a business coach or a career coach, what sort of things should we be looking for in that coach to determine that it's a really good fit for the type of, learning that we want to do?
Cheryl, do you want to take that? Because I don't know whether one of the coaches should or should not take it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think certainly coaches are very valuable, but I'm going to also emphasize that there are also a lot of resources that don't require you. And so coaching, I hope, would never be a crutch to someone, but maybe as a second step after you take advantage of resources that exist.
What kind of resources are you talking about?
For example, just online, there are different types of assessments. A lot of coaching really comes back to how you view yourself, your goals, and things around confidence. A coach is very valuable in giving you tools and opportunities to better explore and understand yourself. But I can also say a lot of things are more readily available, just to give those brief examples.
Did one of the coaches want to weigh in?
Yeah, I would say, check out their track record. I mean, if it's the online world, coaching is a fairly unregulated industry, so anyone can throw up a website with testimonials, right? So you really have to do your due diligence and not just look at their website, but see if you can talk to someone who's worked with them, really be an investigator. And so I would say look for someone who has a good track record of getting their clients the kind of success the clients are looking for, but also someone who you just would want to spend an afternoon with. If you're going to be on the phone with this person, or this person is going to be, leading a group you're in, you want to be with someone that you would want to spend time with anyway. So I would look for the track record and then your just kind of personal connection with them.
That's good advice.
Thank you.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I tend to be very loud, so I have to try to rein it in at times. I am currently new to Austin, going on my 50th day. I have taken on transition beyond my comprehension. I was a wage earner for years, and then through an unfortunate series of medical problems, I wasn't able to work anymore. Started my own risk management company based on my own personal experience and my professional experience. I came to Austin for a position where I was under the impression I was going to bring this great, you know, wealth of information and experience to this nonprofit agency. I was built up by the management, how wonderful I am, and so much. Unfortunately, my team is not having it. And when you go from being a business owner of your own firm, 12 years, to becoming a wage earner again, and you have this idea and, you know, this methodology that you have, and no one is interested in it. And it's almost as like, it reminds me of middle school, as though they're going out of their way to make it difficult for me. So my question I pose to you is, how do I set aside my mindset of how to add value? And that's really all I really came there for, was to add value, not take away, not diminish whatever they've had going, and be the team member that I really sincerely want to be without overshadowing whatever is current.
Which one of you would like, Wendy? Go ahead.
I don't know if you did this when you first came. There's a great book called Your First 90 Days.
Oh, okay.
It's a good book. One of the things that they point out in that book is that we often make the mistake of bringing our own good ideas, and here's how we did it, to the first 3 weeks of the job. I don't know if you did that or not.
Day one.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're really self-referenced, you know you are great, and you have something great to give, and it's hard not to do that. However, people want to be asked what they want and what they have already tried that hasn't worked and what they see as the obstacles. If you took on just shifting your whole point of view to being in an inquiry with them and doing some consultative question answer, gather all that and then weave that into your solution, then you're going to get buy-in. But right now, they're already positioned to fight you because you're saying, I know it, I'm right. You don't know it, and they're saying, well, of course, I know it, you don't. You know what I mean? So I would say try that. That would be one way.
And we have one more question.
We have one more question, and we have to go.
I really did do that, and I think it's because it's the disability community. I am part of the disability community, and the team I work with, they become so indifferent and cavalier toward the disability community. And my passions, I take it very intimately, this community of people. Okay. And that's where the bumping comes, where their interest is not the same as mine.
Thank you for your question.
It might not be a good fit.
We have one more, and then we're going to wrap it up. Do we have one more question?
Go ahead.
Pull that thing right up.
My question is really more directed at Cheryl Adkins Green. Back to the three questions that you said were questions you always ask a woman or whoever. For career changes or maybe just career improvement. What do you want to do? And I would guess that in Mary Kay, that would be, like you said, being the flexibility and freedom of being your own boss, controlling your own destiny.
Yeah. I mean, it's a question that I can ask from a corporate context. If I'm in the independent sales force, I would, again, ask someone about their goals. Yes, I would ask what's important to them, what do they want to do.
And then the second question was why. Articulate why you want to do it. And I would guess that the whys are very diverse, right, for everyone. But I guess really what I wanted to know was the third question was, what is your wow? What's going to make you successful? And if you were going to take the canned or maybe mostly the successful Mary Kay woman, What do you really find usually as their wows, a successful Mary Kay woman?
Certainly there's a cross-section, but I think one thing that is most common is how much they care about improving and enriching the lives of other people. And obviously that can be accomplished in many ways, but at the root, it's their passion, happy use of their passion, for making a difference in other people's lives.
Because what is, so the business isn't really, I guess what you're saying, it's not really about the product as much as just using the product as a vehicle for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, you know, our mission is enriching women's lives, and that is the connection, and it transcends nationalities, ethnicities, and generations.
Is it expensive to be successful in Mary Kay?
Doesn't have to be.
All right, one more quick question, and then we're going to wrap up.
This question is for Laura. You mentioned in between your transition of careers, you had several false starts. Can you describe some of those and how it informed your ultimate success?
Yeah, quickly. So because I was an actor, I thought, I'll be an acting teacher. I have my MFA. Like, that'll be fun to do. And I tried that out, and I thought I was going to do that, and I signed up for a certification program to get an even more advanced degree because that's another thing we do. Right, ladies? More degrees. And then I just decided that long term, that was not going to be a good fit. And then I thought I was going to be a web designer because I could just lose myself for hours at the computer moving pixels and making things look pretty. And then I actually tried that out a little bit. I worked with some friends who needed projects done and discovered I don't like working with people in this capacity. I want to bring my own ideas to life. I don't want to bring your ideas to life. So that didn't work out. And then coaching, I had known several coaches, and I just liked them. I liked the people I met when I was around them. I thought it would give me the kind of life I wanted. I thought it would allow me to have the kind of impact I wanted. So I just started learning about coaching and what kind of coach I could be. And definitely in the last 5 years, my business has changed a lot. And I think that's normal. I think, you know, embracing the evolution is part of, like, you figure out what you want to do by starting something and then letting it grow.
Thanks, Laura. And just, we're short of time here. Everyone's going to say one thing, one takeaway for you all to take home with. So I'm going to start with you.
Say, don't over-limit yourself. Look at your assets, not your obstacles.
Linda? I said before that, you know, get self-possessed and inner authority and all that. How you do that is build yourself a kudos list. So start taking stock of all the achievements, all the great emails you get. Keep them all in one folder. Every single time you do something that people acknowledge, keep it in one place. And then when you're down, look at that. And it'll remind you of, and it'll start internalizing your success. And the free giveaway, should I say it now?
Well just like Gail
said. That's my gift. That's
Find a sponsor.
Yeah.
Look under the hoods of your passion to see what's driving them and find the through line.
Right, and did you had a quick thing you wanted to?
Oh, just if you'd like to, one of the things I didn't include in my book was this worksheet on how to really unravel a negative thought. And so I set it up so that you could get that along with a free chapter of my book. If you text 66866, so 66866, the word spiral, and then you'll be able to get that. And I hope you'll all come to my session at 3 o'clock. I'm going to do a deeper dive into this.
Thank you. And that's it.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Let's give everybody a round of applause on this panel. Carrie and Wendy are both going to be signing books if you're interested, and that is in halls 1 and 2, and that's immediately following, so we got to let them get down there. And thank you again, everybody.